all Greek letters, obviously, for this highest.
Professor Strauss, Philosophy of Plato, Session 10, April 28, 1965.
What happened to Mr. Reinken? You think that who will take his place? Who will take his place? Let us hope that he will come while I make my brief introductory remark. Yes, very good. So, beware, we have been waiting for you. You should not apologize. We only have to thank you. Well, you remember the point. Only one little difficulty, and Socrates is willing to believe Protagoras that virtue can be taught. And one can put the question very simply. You have proven that virtue is taught without making clear what virtue is. The same situation is at the end of the first book of the Republic, where Socrates had proven that justice is good without having made clear what justice is. Now the question is not put quite in this technical form, what is justice, but rather in this way, is justice one, as Protagoras said more than once, or is it many? Because he had spoken of justice, sentiments, and moderation. And which is the right view, Socrates asked, and we come now, if Mr. Reinken is now ready, to 329d3. But it is easy, says Protagoras, to answer this question at any rate. In other words, there may be other questions which would be harder to answer.
There is no difficulty, Socrates, in answering that. The qualities of which you were speaking are the parts of virtue, which is one.
Yeah. Now, Protagoras is in a way relieved, this at any rate is easy to answer, that Socrates has not brought into the open the much graver question to which I referred at the end of last meeting, namely regarding the ambiguity of virtue in his own speech. Is it a virtue which can be expected of every human being, or is it this high-class virtue of which there are various kinds? It's an easy question, and therefore the answer is easy. Now, how does he go on?
And Socrates. Are there parts, I said, in the same sense in which mouth, nose, and eyes, and ears are the parts of a face, or are they like the parts of gold, which differ from the whole and from one another only in being larger or smaller? I should say that they differed, Socrates, in the first way. They are related to one another as the parts of a face are related to the whole face. Do some men have one part and some another part of virtue? Or if a man has one part, must he also have all the others?
Well, let us stop here. Now the question is, parts in what sense? Like the parts of the face, or like the parts of gold, parts qualitatively different from another and the whole, or parts only quantitatively different? Brother says, like the parts of the face. But this has, of course, a great difficulty which is not brought out by him or by anybody else. And what is that? If the parts of virtue are related to virtue as such, as a part of the face, out of the face, what difficulty arises immediately?
The whole is superior to the part.
No, let us, yes. So.
And there's no overriding virtue then. What is the virtue, which is like the nose, and it's just different from the face, and the eyes attached to the face.
Yeah, but more simply, is the nose a face? I see. So in other words, if he is right, the parts of virtue are not virtue, but only altogether. Yes, and now if only all virtues together are, all so-called virtues together are virtue, then of course it follows that virtue is not taught by the Athenians nor by Protagoras, because Protagoras argues on the opposite assumption, as I say. The alternative view is incompatible, namely that they should be only quantitatively different, with what we mean by the difference of the virtues. We do not mean that courage is the same, only quantitatively different from wisdom or so. From, at any rate, from Protagoras' reply, it would follow that one must have all virtues together. A face without a nose or without eyes is not a face. Socrates omits here a third possibility, which he discusses, for example, in The Statesman 260, or someone else discusses there, namely that part, in the sense of a species, is as far a part of a genus. For example, let us say, the virtues might be related to each other like various geometrical figures, circles, rectangles, and so on. Yeah? And then in this case, it would even be to be impossible that they could be there at the same time. Socrates limits alternatives in such a way as to bring Protagoras into a grave difficulty. Because to repeat, if Protagoras' view is right, that the parts of virtue are related to each other like the parts of the face, then one must have all of them together. It's impossible to have only some of them. Because a face without a mouth, or without any of the other four parts, three parts mentioned, is not a face, it's only a very defective one, and therefore it could not be virtue. Good. Now let us... here in this case, he mentions here, and this kind of thing never comes out in the translation when he speaks of the parts of the face. Mouth and nose are taken together. So literally I say that mouth as well as nose and eyes and ears. So there are three really, just as we have three virtues. And it can make, one can explain it, that at least in this sense, that the eyes correspond then to the moderation, which is the central virtue mentioned here. Moderation is defined here in this dialogue, has to do with harmony, rhythm, and this kind of thing, with visible beauty. The ears would correspond to piety, and that is clear because piety, as he understood, rests on tradition, i.e. on what people, what you hear, on what people say. That mouth and, in which sense mouth and nose would correspond to justice is a relatively minor question. Good. Now what does Protagoras say?
By no means, he said. For many a man is courageous and not just, or just and not wise.
Yeah, which is a very popular view and in itself a statement of a triviality. We note in passing that Protagoras does not say that the other way around, that there might be wise men who are unjust, because this would be... this would come too close home, as we will see from the sequel. Yes, and now?
You would not deny then, I replied, that courage and wisdom are also parts of
virtue. This is not when, and are these two parts of virtues? Wisdom and courage? Because you never spoke of them before, that's the point. Hitherto we have spoken only of the three others. Yes, what does he say?
Most undoubtedly they are, he answered. And wisdom is the most important of the parts.
Yeah. Now, so in other words, he had forgotten the most important virtue, but another one, which is by no means unimportant, courage or manliness. Now, in order to give the most telling proof of the truth of his view, that the virtues can be possessed separately, he suddenly remembers the two virtues about which he had been completely silent in his long speech. Why had he been silent about it? Because he was speaking there of that kind of virtue which is expected of everyone, men and women, for example, of whom manliness in any degree is not expected according to the popular view. So we have to say then there are two kinds of virtue, the kinds mentioned in the long speech, justice, moderation and piety, and the other kind is manliness and wisdom. This is a view of some importance. For example, Callicles in the Gorgias, the virtues which he praises, which he regards as genuine virtues, are only manliness and wisdom, not the other virtues. And this culminates, so to speak, in Machiavelli's teaching. Machiavelli makes a distinction between goodness and virtue. And goodness is exactly what the things which Protagoras had meant in his long speech. While virtue, virtu, in Machiavelli's usage, means manliness and wisdom combined. Incidentally, Rousseau makes the same distinction between virtue and goodness, but it has a very different meaning in his. Now, this is an old story. We have some other evidence. For example, Cicero in the Offices, book 1, paragraph 20, says, men are called good, boni viri, with a view to their justice, not with a view to the other virtues. But the most striking illustration is one which is so obvious that we don't think of it. Now, and that is supplied by Plato's Republic. Do you know what I mean, Mr. Tryon?
I believe that all men have to share in justice and that they're...
And in moderation.
Right, and in moderation. But
yeah.
Just one class has courage and just the one man would have wisdom. Just
so, in other, yeah, there is courage and wisdom are the preserve of the higher groups. These are the ones which are expected from everyone. Protagoras, we see from his answer, thinks very highly of the two forgotten virtues, especially of wisdom. So the various virtues differ from one another not only qualitatively, but also in rank. Wisdom is here and the others are much lower. So, one, and it is of course here implied in what he said, that one can be a wise man, although it is not stated, without being just, moderate, pious, and courageous. Completely separate. That will become quite clear from the immediate sequel. Yes.
And they are all different from one another, I said? Yes.
So no, that means also they are separable. That's the point. Yes. Yes.
Yes. And has each of them a distinct function, like the parts of the face?
Yeah, function, power is more literally. Function, that is a modern term, especially as it is now commonly used. Power, faculty, yeah, all right. Each is capable to achieve something special. Yes?
The eye, for example, is not like the ear and has not the same faculty.
It's the same power. Namely, obviously, it's hardly necessary to say that the eye has a power, provides a power of seeing, and the ear provides a power of hearing. And the same would apply to the virtues. Yes?
And of the other parts, none is like another, either in their powers or in any other way. I want to know whether the comparison holds concerning the parts of virtue. Do they also differ from one another in themselves and in their powers? For that is clearly what the simile would imply.
Yeah, but what's the comparison? Yes.
The comparison would imply. Yes, Socrates, they are so.
Now, let us think for one moment about that. Could the different virtues possibly have the same power? Because why does he make this addition of the powers? For instance, moderation could have the same power as justice. I mean, if someone has very small needs and is not in no way competitive, that would be implied in moderation in a certain sense, he would act like the just man, but not as the just man, because the just man would do it for other reasons, for the common good, and so on. One or the other virtue may therefore be superfluous for people who have a certain other virtue. That's implied. If an other virtue can fulfill, may it has this power. Now?
Then, I said, no other part of virtue is like knowledge, or like justice, or like courage, or like self-control, or like holiness. No, he answered.
Yeah. Now he enumerates here five virtues, as you see, because the number has been enlarged by Protagoras, adding the two, and you see what he does here. He which is the central virtue?
Courage.
Yeah, you will see that this will become easily intelligible, because in the following discussion, courage will not be taken up. But courage becomes the theme toward the end. And he replaces wisdom by knowledge, or episteme, which is the origin of our word for science. One can also count differently and can say there are two new virtues here added, knowledge and courage, and in between them is justice. There's a round justice. And this is more helpful for the understanding of the immediate sequence. Yes. Now, so the thesis is perfectly clear. There are five independent virtues, and a man can possess one or two or all of them without having possessing the other. There's no difference. Yes. And now the argument begins. Are the virtues truly separate? Yes?
Well, then, I said, suppose that you and I inquire into the particular nature of each. And first, you would agree with me that justice is some particular thing, is it not?
No, that's not good. Justice is something. Or is it no thing? Pragma in Greek. Corresponding to the Latin res in the original meaning such a thing, not necessarily a tangible thing, but also an affair. Yeah. An affair, as we say, res publica, the common affairs, not a thing like a chair or something of this kind. That is, yes.
That is my opinion. Would it not be yours also? Mine also, he said.
Yeah, but still, justice is a thing. What else could it be? Why does he make that one? Yes?
Just there could be no justice. There could be no such thing as justice.
But what would it be then?
It would be a fiction which you persuade people to be.
But still, it would be something, otherwise, you couldn't even make this remark you did.
Well, justice could not be then justice when we think there's a thing. Something good.
Well, if we read in a few lines, I mean, I do not wish to pretend to kind of wisdom I do not have, we would get the answer. It could be a mere name. That's the opposite here. Is justice a thing or is it a mere name?
Well,
that comes out of the secret. You see also about Thugadatta's thoughts here, he as it were dictates the answers to Protagoras. He says, that's my opinion, what about you? Now why does he do that? Ordinarily Thugadatta does not do that. But here's especially, we are not in an ordinary situation. Why do we engage in this whole business here?
Well, I suppose he doesn't want Protagoras just to make a silly mistake that would require Socrates to either do something insulting or hinder the progress of an argument.
But something very simple. What is the peculiar situation in this dialogue, which we do not have in the same way elsewhere?
Hippocrates,
sure, and he must be prevented from carrying away in his soul unhealthy food. And therefore Socrates interferes much more than he otherwise would. Good. Yes?
And suppose that someone were to ask us, saying, O Protagoras, and you, Socrates, what about this thing which you were calling justice?
Yeah, which you have just named. So the contrast to name is quite clear.
You have just named justice. Is it just or unjust?
Now we see here again another dialogue within the dialogue, by which Socrates achieves that he is in the same boat as Protagoras. He also is cross-examined. But of course here the third party, which addresses both of them through the mouth of Socrates, is also a warner, because that has to do with the subject under discussion, as we will gradually see. Because the subject will be justice and piety, and Protagoras was not very sound in this respect. Yes. Good. Now let us go.
You would use piety for Hosion?
Since he uses Hosiotes all the time, I think we can translate it here in this context as we like, because there is no difference here intended between Hosiotes and Eusebia. He translates it, Deleuze translates it by saintliness, which of course is a bit too much, because saintliness, we understand, a high degree of piety.
Well, holiness.
Holiness also wouldn't be more. A man is pious in the ordinary sense if he fulfills his religious obligation. It does not by this very fact. I mean, as I expected of everyone, he would not by doing this become saintly or holy. So we can here translate it as we want, because the question does not come up. Yes.
This, okay. Which you have named justice, is it just or unjust? And I would answer just. How would you vote, with me or against me?
You see again, he really guides him. Yes?
With you, he said. Thereupon, I should answer to him who asked me, that justice is of the nature of the just. Would not you?
More simply, justice is something like being just. And therefore, how should not justice be just? Yes.
But justice is just. Would not you? Yes, he said. And suppose that he went on to say, well now, is there also such a thing as piety?
Literally, is there not some sort of piety? Hosiotatina. Is this more qualified?
Not some sort of piety. We should answer yes, if I am not mistaken. Yes, he said. Which you would also acknowledge to be a thing, should we not? He assented. He assented.
Now the question regarding piety is slightly more elaborate than the question regarding justice, as you see. Yes?
And is this a sort of thing which is pious or impious?
You say that there is, that this is also a thing. We would affirm it. or not? And then, how does he go on with that?
He assented.
You see, Sukadev suddenly drops here the direct speech and falls into indirect speech. It's a tiny little change, which is very meaningful, as will appear later. And very simply, how could he have expressed his agreement? There are many ways in which you can agree. You can say yes, and you can say false, and so on and so on. But you can also just not that it, or express your agreement by any other silent sign. This we do not know. Good. Yes.
And is it pious or impious? I should be angry at his putting such a question, and should say, "Peace, man." Nothing.
More than use decent language, use reverent language, euphema, favete linguis.
Yeah. Bite your tongue.
So. Yeah.
Nothing can be pious if piety is not pious. What would you say? Would you not answer in the same way? Certainly, he said.
Yeah, good. So, it is not clear whether Protagoras, in contradistinction to Socrates, would have become indignant. It's very rare that Socrates becomes indignant, or at least says, "I would be indignant." But otherwise, there is perfect agreement between the two men. Justice is just, piety is pious. What these seemingly trivial things mean will appear from the sequel. Yes.
And then, after this, suppose that he came and asked us, "What were you saying just now? Perhaps I may not have heard you rightly, but you seem to me to be saying that the parts of virtue in their mutual relation were not the same as one another." I should reply, "You certainly heard that said, but not as you imagined by me. I only asked the question. Protagoras gave the answer." And suppose that he turned to you and said, "It's true, Protagoras. And do you maintain that one part of virtue is unlike another, and is this your position?" How would you answer him? I could not help acknowledging the truth of what he said,
yeah.
Socrates.
No, Socrates, in other words, finishes now this situation where they are both in the same boat. He emphasizes the disagreement. In spite of the agreement which was emphasized before. Yes, now Protagoras has now to defend the thesis that while justice is just, it isn't pious. And while piety is pious, it isn't just. You see that these seemingly verbal things are full of rich in non-verbal meanings. Yes. You must never, you will not know that Protagoras' piety was a very questionable thing. He began a book with the words, "Whether the gods are or are not, I do not know, the abstruseness of the subject, and the brevity of my life," he lived until he was almost 70, prevent me from knowing the truth about it. And the book was burned then in Athens, and he was expelled because of his impiety. So this is, of course, known to Plato when he wrote that, even if it wasn't known to Socrates at the time of the discussion. Yes?
Well then, Protagoras, we will assume this. And now, supposing that he proceeded to say further, then piety is not of the nature of a just...
Yeah, if he were to ask us, you see, Socrates does not completely sever his relation with Protagoras. Yeah? If he were to ask us, in addition, yes?
Nor justice of the nature of a pious thing, but of the nature of an impious thing, and piety of the nature of a not just, and therefore of the unjust, and the unjust is the impious, how shall we answer him? I should certainly answer him in my own behalf that justice is pious and that piety is just, And I would say in like manner on your behalf also, if you would allow me, that justice is either the same with piety, or very nearly the same, and above all, I would assert that justice is like piety, and piety is like justice. And I wish that you would tell me whether I may be permitted to give this answer in your behalf.
Yes. This is, he tries to build a golden bridge for Protagoras. Socrates would say that justice is pious and piety is just, which would not necessarily mean that justice is identical with piety. For instance, be pious in the sense of worshipping the gods by being just, but also by sacrificing and praying, which are not implied in justice. And it may also be one is just by giving every being its due, and hence by worshipping the gods. Here, piety would appear as a subdivision of justice, but a subdivision of something is of course not the same as that broader whole. Now his proposal to Protagoras also leaves open the possibility that the two virtues are not identical. He says they may be only very similar. Now you must have observed the fallacious conclusion of Socrates. If justice is not pious, it is impious, and vice versa. Piety would be unjust. Still, there is, we must not in this discussion forget one crucial distinction which is, comes out more clearly in the Platonic dialogue Euthyphron. Two meanings of piety. Doing what the gods tell men to do through their priests, oracles, etc. And doing what the gods do, i.e. imitating the gods. Now the latter would of course mean to imitate Zeus's adulteries. So, and here it is perfectly clear that justice and piety would be two very different things. So the, I mean, this question is not merely, is a very grave question, it's clear. So Socrates has offered Protagoras a fine way out. Now let us see what Protagoras in his wisdom chooses. Yes?
He replied, "This matter does not seem to be quite so simple, Socrates, that I can agree to the proposition that justice is pious and that piety is just, for there appears to me to be a difference between them."
A very wise answer, as I believe I have shown, because the point of view would be different in any case. Socrates' proposal goes too far for Protagoras. The difference between piety and justice is such as to preclude saying that justice is pious and piety is just. It cannot be simple. Now, what? How does it go on, Protagoras?
But what matter? If you please, I please. And let us assume, if you will, that justice is pious and that piety is just.
In other words, the matter is not important enough to quarrel about it. Have it your way, Socrates. But that's not what Socrates wishes, as we see from the sequel.
Pardon me, I replied. I do not want this if you please or if you like sort of proposition to be put to the test, but I want you and me to be tested. I mean to say that the proposition will be best tested if you take the if out of it.
Yeah. So, in other words, Socrates demands that Protagoras speak up, that he identifies himself with the thesis, with the logos. We shall see later on that Socrates is not of the opinion that one cannot discuss a thesis even if the man who maintains it does not believe in it. Of course that is possible. But Socrates has to think of something else here, of somebody else. Our young friend Hippocrates, Hippocrates must know somehow where Protagoras stands. And therefore it is important to know what Protagoras says and not merely which thesis he maintains for argument's sake. Yes?
Well, he said, I admit that justice bears a resemblance to piety, for there is always some point of view in which everything is like every other thing. White is in a certain way like black, and hard is like soft, and the most extreme opposites have some qualities in common. Even the parts of the face, which, as we were saying before, are distinct, have different powers, are still in a certain point of view similar, and one of them is like another of them. And you may prove, if you please, in the same principle, that all things are like one another, and yet things which are alike in some particular ought not to be called alike.
More literally, it is not just to call things which have some similarity similar, nor those which have some dissimilarity dissimilar, when the similarity is only very small. Now let's see, Protagoras accepts here Socrates' identification of justice and piety in the sense that they have a certain similarity. But he adds, even the most opposite things have a certain similarity. Black and white are similar insofar as they're colors. Now, the implication, justice and piety could be, this, or the similarity between justice and piety could be negligibly small for all practical purposes. They still would have something in common because they are praised. Surely this statement is astonishing, as Socrates says in The Secret. A man may be pious without being just, and a man may be just without being pious. This surely follows from Protagoras' general assertion. Now this somewhat difficult sentence at the end of the passage, right? One must not call dissimilar things, like justice and piety, one must not call them dissimilar, if they have some resemblance, however small. Now, what was I saying? And I, having fallen to wonder, or being amazed,
And do you think, I said in a tone of surprise, that justice...
Yeah, not a tone, that is wrong. Socrates says here simply, he presents himself as being genuinely surprised.
And I, in wonder, said that justice, do you think that justice and piety have but a small degree of likeness? Certainly not, any more than I agree with what I understand to be your view.
In other words, they have some similarity, but not such a great one as you say, nor are they altogether dissimilar. Yes?
Well, I said, as you appear to be unhappy about this, let us take another of the examples which you mentioned instead.
Yeah, good. Protagoras obviously doesn't like the discussion of this subject. This should be clear, the difference between justice and piety. And Socrates, being an obliging man, drops the subject. Protagoras' caution, of which he spoke when in the same context in which he spoke of his candor, is obviously not good enough, because as a first test, he is not cautious enough, as we say. Yes. Now, this was a discussion of piety and justice, and nothing has been proven about their identity. The utmost is that they have some similarity, some resemblance, which of course means they are not identical. Yes?
Could Protagoras not have agreed
agree with what Socrates said and still maintain that there's a similarity, but they're not the same. Socrates said that justice is pious. He didn't say justice is piety, and the reverse. So that the example of worshiping would allow that.
But that would mean that if you are, justice is pious, by complying with the requirements of piety, you act just.
I was thinking that pious would be somehow the act would fall under that description, but it would not be piety. The act of worshipping.
Yeah, that is clear. The question would be, what about worshipping the gods? In other words, it could mean that by acting justly toward human beings, we do the will of the God. That's piety. But then there is this big other subject of sacrifice and prayer, which is left out. I struggle with that. That the point of view of piety is not the point of view of justice. But this would be compatible. That the subject matter, so to speak, is the same in both cases. But it could be, because worshipping the gods could simply be an act of gratitude of the gods, and gratitude falls under the heading of justice. So that could be, but this is of course not what Protagoras has in mind. Protagoras has private notions about the difference between justice and piety, generally being that the reasonableness of justice is more evident than the reasonableness of piety. It amounts to that. Mr. Levy?
Protagoras is internationally famous, and one of the most of the internationally famous Socrates. And Socrates is the very most, is a local notable.
Yes.
Why does Protagoras or Socrates initiate, guide, and lead a discussion when he doesn't like the conversation at point? And
you
very easily stop it and appeal to the crowd,
it's
not Socrates.
Yeah, but still, he has no idea what serpent he has to do with. I mean, he knows that he's a very clever young man, but that he could lick him, it never occurred to him. It is a great experience which he will make soon afterward. And hitherto he regards him as someone. Then he annoys him a bit, you see, but he can always take care of him. Yeah. More is needed. Protagoras doesn't know what the fellow Socrates is. And of course, and in addition, he cannot easily jump out. He has to think of his reputation. He must not, by jumping out at the proper, on the improper place, damage his reputation. Here is a boy Hippocrates with lots of money who wants to become his student. I mean, you know, without the presence of Hippocrates, we cannot understand the dialogue in every, on the highest and on the lowest level. So now, so Socrates leaves it off here, and everyone can draw his own conclusion what Protagoras thinks about piety. But now he turns to another subject, in where we left off.
Do you admit the existence of folly? I do. And is not wisdom the very opposite of folly? That is true, he said. And when men act rightly and advantageously,
Wait a moment. Now, now a new subject begins. I think I should draw the plan.
The trunk's in the drawer.
Oh. If... And you have no idea how many thieves there are.
I had a...
Yeah. Yeah, there was a time
that.
When I took it home each time to be sure. Let us enumerate the virtues. Yeah? I mentioned piety, justice. Now, hitherto he has proven in a way that piety is an enemy of justice. Now we come to wisdom and moderation. and he proves their identity. And then he turns to moderation and proves its identity with justice. And then, of course, this goes back. Well, I should have begun with justice. Then, of course, they all four verses are identical. The only one which is dropped here for the time being is courage. And we will see later why this is the case. Yeah? So this is one thing. And this would be perfectly compatible, the second stage, with the fact that piety and justice are identical, but have nothing in common with wisdom and moderation. And then only in the last stage are these two united. That's a structure again. Now, there is one difficulty here, verbal, and that has to do with the Greek term which I translate by moderation, sophrosyne, which has a very large, range of meaning. And I suggest that for our present purpose, we can translate it by something like being sensible. Being sensible. You can easily see that moderation can be said to be being sensible. I mean, it's easily understood. For example, be sensible, don't drink too much, and so on. And but of course, it is not quite the same as wisdom, because in the case of wisdom, we think also of theoretical wisdom and of great abilities and this kind of thing. That's clear. But we cannot follow this somewhat sophisticated argument of Socrates if we do not translate properly. So, and I would put it this way, I would say, is there such a thing as senselessness? Yes. And its opposite is wisdom. The senseless man is at the lowest level, and the wise man is at the top. Sure. Now, where were we in 320?
Can wisdom be opposite of folly? That is true.
Yeah. 32a. 6, yeah. Good. Now, when men act correctly as well as usefully, do you have
rightly and advantageously, do they seem to you to be sensible or not?
Yeah, or to act,
act sensibly. Or not? Yes, he said. And Sophrosyne, being sensible, makes them sensible. Certainly. And they who do not act rightly act foolishly, and in acting thus are not sensible. I agree, he said. Then to act foolishly is the opposite of acting sensibly.
Yeah, to act senselessly,
senselessly.
Is the opposite. Yeah. So by acting correctly and usefully, men act sensibly. Hence, if acting justly and piously is acting correctly and usefully, you would follow that justice and piety are forms of being sensible, of forms of sophrosyne. Is this not obvious? I mean, in other words, here's the first time that we get something more than the merely verbal. Because acting sensibly is now said to be acting correctly and usefully. Here we get a somewhat more concrete notion. Yes? You must also see here, the transition to indirect speech, that Socrates does no longer report what Protagoras literally said, but he says he agreed, and which I said could mean silent nodding or some other expression of the face without any word. Good. Now, go on.
Yes, and senseless actions are done by senselessness, and sensible actions by sensibleness. He agreed. And that is done strongly, which is done by strength, and that which is weakly done by weakness. He assented. And that which is done with swiftness is done swiftly, and that which is done with slowness, slowly. He assented again.
Yes, in other words, he uses now this example. Senselessness and sensibility, if I may say, are opposites of the same character as, say, quickness and slowness, and strength and weakness. Now, here, when you, if you take this literally, the comparison of sophrosyne, of sensibility, with slowness. In the dialogue Charidas, the first definition of sensibility, moderation, however you might call it, is acting slowly, you know, not rashly. Now, it would, of course, have the grave implication that they are also coordinated, sophrosyne is also coordinated with weakness, in contradistinction to strength. Now, let us see whether Socrates divines something of Protagoras by then.
And that which is done in the same way is done by the same, and that which is done in opposite ways by opposites. We agree. Once more, I said, is there anything beautiful?
Yes.
To which the only opposite is the ugly? There is no other. And is there anything good? There is. To which the only opposite is the evil? There is no other. And there is the high in tone? True. To which the only opposite is the low? There is no other, he said, but that. Then every opposite has one opposite only and no more. He assented.
Yes. You see, now he speaks explicitly of the beautiful or noble and the good, about which he had been silent in the discussion of piety and justice. Now we have here altogether five examples: strength, quickness, the beautiful or noble, the good, and the shrill. The noble or is in the center is here undertaken to be the good. Otherwise, it wouldn't make sense to say the good is the noble, the opposite is the base. The good, the opposite is the bad. Now, but if there is such a fundamental distinction between the noble or beautiful and the good, there might be a variety of virtues on that very basis. Virtues related to the noble, virtues related to the good. We must keep this in mind. The main point, everything which has opposites has only one opposite. The whole argument hinges on this principle. Now, this is a true principle. Protagoras accepts it. Yes?
Well, something which, I mean, say, to take the one of the examples he uses, something which isn't noble needs to be base, and can be more or less totally indifferent to nobility or not. So that you would say that the opposite of the noble is the base, and the opposite of the noble could also be whatever, you know, is a noble, the ordinary.
The logisms distinguish between which contrary? The contrary and the contradictory. Say, good, the contrary is bad. The contradictory is non-good, which may be something absolutely neutral. Yeah? That is one way of stating that. But one could also say, is it true in the humanly relevant things that there is only one opposite? Yes?
Well, if you have, if you go back to the discussion of virtues and the ethics, take courage. Courage is the extreme, which is rash and cowardly. And the mean is courage, which is the opposite of each extreme. But each extreme is the opposite of itself. Like rash is the opposite of cowardliness, but it's also the opposite of courage.
Yeah.
As is.
What you say is very right, except that you said if we go back.
I was thinking of a fourth quarter.
Yes. But of course, this you cannot suppose that these people who listened to that had read the Sigmarine Ethics. But the question is whether Plato himself did not recognize that, say, a foolhardiness is an opposite of courage, as well as cowardice, and he does this, we can prove this from the Lachas. So that is not a necessary principle. Now, that is, yes?
If, however, there was such a one thing as virtue,
then either a person would participate in this virtue or he would not. And this would be a, it's either a yes or no. Either.
Give so, an example, I don't follow you.
No, listen to me. I think here Socrates is saying there is one thing, that virtue is one reality, in which it's, you cannot be moderate without being wise, without being just, because it all refers to one reality.
Yeah, but so he doesn't argue, he tries to establish that. I mean, to begin with, we mean something different by sophrosyne, by moderation, and by wisdom. And so he's trying to prove the identity. The argument is roughly this. Folly, or senselessness, as I said, is an opposite of wisdom. But it is also the opposite of moderation. But one opposite can only have one other opposite. Hence, moderation must be identical with wisdom. Yeah, that's the simple one, and which is based on a number of difficulties. Now let us first read the sequel.
When every opposite has one opposite only and no more, he assented. Then now, I said, let us recapitulate our admissions. First of all,
because we are already through in a way, yes?
We
the political life being imperfect, the guy happiness, is justified as a way leading to happiness afterwards. Empirically, the contemplative life is the blessed life. Empirically, the political life is not blessed. But if it is to be given the high status which Cicero wants to give it here, it must be the way, or the chief way, to the life of bliss. You know, that in truth, it is only a preparation, a condition for the perfect life. It is not in itself perfect. As for the fact that this is a dream, that his whole thing is presented as a dream, there, of course, that is very ambiguous. It first, after all, these doctrines had been presented as doctrines by various people, Plato, Pythagoreans, and others. But here it's presented as a dream, which could mean in the first place, of course, and does mean, this is not, we don't know that it is true. These are hopes, imaginations, or whatever you, but no sense. It also refers, I believe, to the fact that it is a strictly, and that is not that is connected with the first, it is a strictly private a thing. The dream is distinct from awaking by its private character. Yeah? I mean, in being awake, we have the same world in common. But in dream, each one has his own world. This is a private world of Scipio. Private in what sense? A, because it is merely opinion, not knowledge. B, because he keeps it private. His public speeches, his public deeds, are all predicated on the premise that to be a servant of throne is the highest thing he could possibly do. But he is aware of the questionable character of this public opinion and the maxim based on and the maxim following based on this opinion.
Virtue and the use of it. And I think Cicero was saying the highest what it means. It would mean that the man who combines the perfection of the theoretical man with the high perfection of the practical man is a more complete man than the one who has only, who exercises only the perfection of the theoretical. And that is, of course, if it is true that the one perfection is than the other, and then it is, of course, not necessarily the combination is not superior to the highest element.
Unless, of course, the perfection of this being requires a combination of perfection of higher and lower elements.
You mean there is something would atrophy if he doesn't cultivate both?
Yeah, well, I mean, as Aristotle pointed out, to perfect the highest element in man, somehow to transcend the new, you know, to be more, to be divine, where we're properly human, politically, you know, in making this decision.
You know, that he makes, there occurs something, a very strong statement about the divinity of which man is capable. Do you think that it occurs?
An ability?
Of the divinity of which man, divinity of which man is capable. I do not remember now that it was. On page 29, bottom, if you would read that.
Strive on indeed, and be sure that it is not you that is mortal, but only your body. For that man, your outward form revealed, is not yourself, spirit, the true self.
The true self, of course, are not heads, which occur in that. You are not he. Philosophy is primarily political philosophy because political philosophy is required for protecting the inner sanctum of philosophy. This lecture has been a bit longer than I would have wished, and also my plan has gone wrong for some other reason, so I will devote the next lecture to the main thread of Plato's Republic. And the last one on Friday to the subject Plato and the poets. I believe you have seen by now that this is an absolutely crucial subject for Plato, the relative relation or status of poetry and philosophy. One could venture to say that the alternative to philosophy, to Platonic philosophy, is not any other philosophy, be it that of the pre-Socratics or of Aristotle or not, but poetry. And therefore, we really deal with a crucial issue by raising the question of how Plato conceived of the relation between philosophy and poetry.